The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Want to talk about a new movie? Check. Want to talk about an older movie similar or related to that new movie?
Check.
That's what you can expect from Quality Check Podcast.
It's a new podcast on the Studio DNA Network, hosted by yours truly, Drew Douglas and
Daniel Posey. Every other Tuesday, we'll talk about a new movie and an old movie to see how the film's quality holds up.
When it comes time to choosing a pet or a dog that you've become obsessed with, how did you choose your pets?
One, I didn't get a choice because my wife had him, the small one, the Shih Tzu. My wife had him before we ever started dating, and he actually turns 10 like next week. And then I'm allergic to most animals, so we knew he wanted something hypoallergenic, and we wanted a doodle, a golden doodle. And I don't know, we saw a picture of her on like online, and we were like, oh my gosh, she's perfect. And she was like tiny, and she was the runt. And so that's how we picked our Jane, but... We didn't know we were going to become obsessed at the time. It just sort of naturally happened.
Who's in the room with you right now that's trying to get your attention?
This is Jane. She's our golden doodle. Come here, Susie. Come here. Want to come up here? Come here.
How do you choose the name Jane?
Jagger, our little dog. He's a Shih Tzu. He's actually here too somewhere. He's just tiny. He'll probably jump on the couch in a minute. Kristen named him not after Mick Jagger, but after the Maroon 5 song Moves Like Jagger. So then when we got Jane, she's named after the Maroon 5 album, Songs About Jane.
Someone in your house likes Maroon 5.
And it wasn't me at first, believe it or not. So whenever I was like, you know, on the show and I was on Team Adam, I didn't really have a choice. I could not have said another coach. I don't think I would be married if I had.
My guest is singer Jordan Smith.
What else with Corey Mann? On the Studio DNA Podcast Network.
Harlan, Kentucky, is that the place of origin?
Technically, I was actually born in Corbin, Kentucky, which is where I live now. Well, I was raised in Harlan. I don't know why my mom drove an hour down the road to have me, but she did.
So let's go with Corbin, Kentucky. Let's say you and I are going back to hometown for one day. Where are we going to go? What are we going to do? We're going to eat. We're going to see where you grew up.
Okay, so we could probably, in 8 to 12 hours, we could hit Corbin and Harlan. We drive to Harlan. I mean, you can see where I grew up. It's not like my actual, like, childhood home is not super special, but it's fine. So, see where I grew up. We have a state park in our town called Kingdom Come State Park. It's the best name ever. It's absolutely gorgeous, like, overlooks the mountains, has, like, a ton of black bears and, like, all kinds of wildlife. We have the highest point in Kentucky in Harlan called Black Mountain.
You been up there?
Yeah. So we can go up there. We could take a little trip on down to Corbin. We can visit the first Kentucky Fried Chicken that ever existed. It was technically Sanders Cafe, but it became Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Wow.
And the first one here, and there's like a little museum now, and we'd have some fried chicken. We could go to Cumberland Falls, which is one of the only places in either the northern or the eastern hemisphere. I can't remember. I think the only other place you can see it is like Angel Falls in Africa. You can see a moonbow. So a rainbow at night created by moonlight.
I love that you're back where you started, though. Is that because you like the, I like where I'm from. I like, you know, my family. I have a connection to Corbin. Is that why you're there?
Yeah, I think for us, Kristen and I, when we got married, we wanted to be close to our families. I knew that I was sort of signing up. I had just come off of The Voice and I was sort of signing up for a crazy lifestyle. And I knew I was going to have to travel and be on the road. And I didn't want to go away and her not have people to be like with her and her be near her family. And then I wanted to be able to come home and it be like a retreat. I didn't want to like come home to Los Angeles and be where I worked. And I wanted it to be like I could get away whenever I came home and be away from everything. So we're only a few hours from Nashville, which is where I work most of the time now. So it's easier for me to, you know, pop down there and come home whenever I need to. But we just love it. We love Kentucky. We're very proud of our home state and where we're from. We love being from here. We love the people of Kentucky. We just have a huge heart for Kentucky. And so we wanted to stay here as much as possible.
I learn a lot about people, Jordan, when I ask about their parents. So who was mom and dad?
My mom and dad are both awesome people. They're both nurses. So growing up, either I rarely went to the doctor at times or I always went to the doctor because it was either, oh no, we can fix that at home, it's totally fine. Or, oh my gosh, you sneezed. That's a symptom of this. So we're going. but they're both incredible. My dad actually for many years worked with hospice. And so he worked with like people who were actively dying and comforting families. And he has a very special gift for working with people in those moments. I could never do that myself. But he has, you know, an incredible heart and he's so good at that. Yeah. And then my mom, she's a nurse and she's a crafter. She's like very known in my hometown for like being the crafty lady. She's like a seamstress and she sews. She makes lots of things. And so now that's what she does with us every day. She doesn't nurse anymore. She's usually in her house sewing lots of things for people. She loves to bless people with stuff like that. My mom and dad, I grew up in a little tiny mountain church of about 40 people on a good Sunday. And my mom and dad, if you called them worship leaders in that time, that's what they would be. But they both play the piano. My dad, when he was young, traveled and played piano professionally for a little while. I don't know if you ever heard of the artist Betty Jean Robinson, but she used to have a show on TV called Melody Mountain. I remember my dad showing me like old episodes of it. And he would travel with her and play piano for her, sometimes a Southern gospel artist. He and my mom were very musical. Both my brothers, because of that, our musical, one brother plays the drums and sings, but he pretends that he can't do either. And then the other one pretends to play guitar and sing, but he, you know, he can't do it. I'm just kidding. They're both musical. They're both great. So it's, you know, it's, I was sort of like, I didn't have a choice but to be musical with those older brothers doing that and my parents doing that.
What songs do you associate with when you said mom and dad sing in church? What songs are coming to mind?
My dad used to sing, "He touched me, oh, he touched me, and oh, the joy that floods my soul." He sang that song. And my mom would sing this song. Oh my gosh, it killed me inside. I would cry every time she sang it too, even as a kid. This one song. Oh, it was, I think it's called "That I Could Still Go Free." It would say, "That I could still go free. What kind of man would reach down his head and do this for me?" It was so good every time.
I'm wondering why you have not done a Faithful Hymns record yet with what I just heard.
It's probably going to have to happen. As I was singing, I was like, I have to do this.
Where is the greatest thy faithfulness? Where is the, there's just something about that name. That song was a big one growing up for me.
Oh yeah, there's just something about that name. Yeah.
Who told you you could sing and you believed them?
The first person to say it and it really make a difference and make an impact and be something that I, you know, that sort of stopped me in my tracks and made me consider this as something more than just, you know, something that I like to do was when I joined choir in the fifth grade. So where I'm from in Kentucky, the arts programs are not well funded. I grew up having music classes, but they weren't like band and choir. We weren't learning music. We were just learning like about art in general with some music thrown in, arts and humanities. And so I joined our local children's choir when I was in fifth grade, and I had to every Friday ride an hour on the bus after school to get there. And I would actually get there like 20 minutes later than everybody else. And I would have like 40 minutes of choir. And that was all the music training or anything that I was getting until I was in probably high school. it was then, as I started getting older, as I was in middle school, that my choir teacher, we became really close, and she started recognizing sort of the gift that I had and the passion that I had for it. And so she started taking extra time and working with me, and she would meet me some days after school and we would work together. And she started signing me and a few other students up for like some solo competitions, and she would go and play piano for us, and we would perform, and we would get graded by these judges who were professional musicians. And she really took an interest in helping me and fostering that love of music into an appreciation for music. And so she was sort of the first, her name was Miss Lee, and she was sort of the first person to say, hey, Jordan, this is not just something that you enjoy, this is something you're really good at and you should consider. And she actually stuck with me. She ended up teaching my high school music class when I got to high school. All 4 years of my high school experience, she was with me, and she helped me get into colleges and do college auditions and all of it. She was there for it all. And we're like still very close.
I love that. Yeah. Did you do any school plays? Did you have that in your background at all? Did you get up there and do Annie or whatever?
I did a few school plays. It was funny when I was in, I loved, you know, the arts so much. When I was in high school, I actually ran out of electives because I did choir and band.
Ooh, what'd you play?
I played the drums. That was my first instrument even. I would play the drums in church before I ever sang. I was just a kid. And so I was on the drum line. I actually started playing on the high school drum line when I was in sixth grade. And like, they let me like start coming after school and joining them. And it was really awesome. My last year, my senior year, I was the drum major. So I like directed the marching band on the field.
You're the guy with the giant, what do you call it?
Although I didn't have a giant thing. I had a rifle.
You had a rifle?
I didn't have a scepter or whatever it is.
Did you have dangly fringe?
No, but I had a sequin sash.
Did you have a helmet with a fin or anything on it?
I did have a helmet with a plume. I'm going to have to find a picture of that for you, Corey. It's crazy. Anyway, now that I'm distracted and thinking about those days, so I did that, and I played the bass clarinet that year. I learned how to play the clarinet just because they didn't have enough. And I said, I'll learn it. So I spent so much time doing that, I didn't have an extra elective. So what I did was I became friends with the theater teacher, the director in the theater. And I started sort of like hanging around, and then I would have after school rehearsals, and I would hang around, and I just became her like general understudy. So then on days where they would have plays, they would bus in all the elementary students from the area to watch their plays. That's who they would perform for. And that morning, like inevitably, there would be a sick person or a kid wouldn't show up, or they would be like, my mom didn't bring me. So I would go and put together some kind of costume, and I would play that part, and I would learn the lines like before each scene. I would stand backstage and I would learn the lines for that scene. I would go out and do it, and then I would come back out and I would learn the lines for the next scene. And so most of it was just ridiculous improv, but it was so much fun. I think that's why I fell in love with being on stage, just because I just loved like the thrill of being out there and not fully knowing what was going to happen, and like it being in front of a bunch of people. I just thought that was so fun for some reason. It was such an adrenaline rush.
The winner of The Voice is Jordan Smith, Pete Adams. Congratulations, and a big hand for Jordan and all four of our finalists tonight, and a big hand for Emily Ann Roberts, runner up. Let's get Jordan's coach up here, Adam. Let's get the family up here.
How does one find themselves on the NBC hit show The Voice? How does that work?
Well, when you're born, they put on your birth certificate a little V. I'm just kidding. Back in 2014, I'd been a fan of the show for a long time. And Kristen, who we were just dating at the time, now we're married, but we were just dating at the time. She was a big fan of the show, obviously, because she loved Adam Levine. I was a fan for a long time. I was in college studying music, and the auditions came to Nashville, and I went to college about 2 hours from Nashville. So on a Friday night, I was like, they're there tomorrow. I talked to a couple friends. I was like, we should sign up tonight, and we should like leave at 3 a.m. and drive over there and get there early and audition. Like, it would be just for fun, you know. Waited in line with like 4,000 people, got the audition like 7.5 hours later. Sing in front of a producer. You literally get to sing like 30 seconds of a song in front of a producer. It's not like special, you know.
Do you remember what you sang?
I sang Halo by Beyonce. He said, do you know any choruses like anything else? He was like, if you could sing one song, like, and that was it, you only had one chance to like sing a song, what would it be? He was, you know, like, okay. He called everybody out of the room. He was like, everybody can go except Jordan. Whoever Jordan was, you stay. And I was like, okay. So everybody left and I got a call back. So I had to come back the next week and sing for producers again. So I come back the next week, I do that. And they're like, if it's a yes, you'll hear from us. If it's a no, you won't hear anything by this date. So I waited and waited and waited and waited. I never heard anything. I told everybody, oh yeah, it was on a whim. It's totally fine. It's not that big of a deal. You know, I just did it for fun. But deep down, I had always sort of had this thought that that might be how it was going to happen for me. I had this weird thing my whole life where me and my family, especially when I started getting into music, we all just sort of had this understanding or this thing between us that like, this is what I was going to do one day. We didn't know how it was going to happen or anything like that, but we knew like there was some, like the gift I had was not just like what everybody else was walking around and doing. And so like when my mom dropped me off for college, she said, I got to say, I thought you would have had some big break by now. I just never imagined I'd be dropping you off for going to college. I never thought you'd go to college. And I was like, thank you, Mom. I'm going to have a great 4 years because of that. Thank you so much. Thanks for your confidence in me. But it was just like, we all had this like idea. I would go to Winter Jam at 13 years old and I would leave sick to my stomach because I would say, that's what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to be on that stage doing that. And I have no idea how I'm going to make that happen. Like, I have no connections. I'm not the right person. I don't have the right last name. I'm nobody from nowhere. So whenever The Voice, you know, that sort of presented itself, I was like, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the thing. So when I didn't get the call back, I was like, oh yeah, it's no big deal. But inside I was pretty devastated because I genuinely was like, all right, Lord, you sneaky, you got me. This is it. I just was after that. I was like, you know what? I'm going to buckle down. I'm going to finish school. Everything's going to be fine. A year later, almost to the day, I think it was like 367 days, maybe, I get this email from a scout for The Voice who had been a contestant on The Voice before. Mr. Anthony Evans, don't know if you know who that is. He emailed me and he said, hey, Jordan, I saw a video of you singing at your school. He said, I saw a video of you singing and I was wondering if you ever considered auditioning for this show that's on TV called The Voice. And he had no idea I'd ever auditioned before. So I went back and I went to Atlanta and I auditioned. I sang the exact same songs I sang in the first audition. I did everything exactly the same way. And I got a call back and I ended up flying out to LA and ended up getting a blind audition and then I made it onto the show and then I just kept progressing and progressing until I won the show that December. It was a crazy just journey, all of it.
How much actual coaching did Adam Levine speak into you?
It sort of varied through the process. Obviously it's television, so there's like stuff happening on screen for scenes for TV. Like it's all about making good TV. And other than our actual celebrity coaches, we had choreographers that we were working with. I had a specific voice coach that I was working with who was incredible. That was, you know, we were having sessions and rehearsing the songs and she was actually like hands-on coaching me. And then I would go into like our celebrity on-screen rehearsals, which we would have a few of, like a week, you know, a couple of those for different scenes for the show. And during that time, like I have to say, it wasn't a very long time and it wasn't like constant throughout the week, but when we were together, he was very serious about the mentoring process. He had a lot of really great advice. We would like communicate through email and stuff, and he was very involved in the song selection process. We were connected and we were working together, but we didn't have a lot of like face-to-face time off camera, if that makes sense.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Do you decide, I want to sing Great is Thy Faithfulness, or does someone else?
Yes. Well, this will blow your mind. It's sort of a collaborative effort. And when you go on, when you find out like, okay, I'm actually going to be performing on the show, they usually base your blind audition off of like something that you've done. So in my one of my final auditions, I sang Chandelier by Sia because I was like, this will be impressive. And then they were like, you should do that for your blind audition. And I was like, okay, whatever you say. So they sort of base that off of what they've heard from you. And then from them moving forward, they give you like the option to submit a list of like, these are my 25 dream songs.
Oh, okay.
And they sort of use that as a guide. I think producers, your coach, everybody gets access to that. You get access to it. And you all sort of use that as a guide moving forward of like, okay, here's some ideas. Here's something in that world. Here's something that fits who you are as an artist. It's very collaborative. Obviously, like the off-screen producers have a say in all of it, but ultimately, like they want you to be comfortable as an artist. So if you downright like refuse to sing a song, or if you insist, like they're going to do what they can to make it happen outside of like, you know, licensing stuff and all that. So when it came to a song like Great Is Thy Faithfulness, I had just like written down a couple of hymns on my list, you know, a few different things, never imagining. And one day I go into like our meeting and they sit down and they say, Adam is really like insistent that you do this hymn that's on your list this week. Like he thinks that that would be really good for you to do. Yeah, he knows like that means a lot to you. It's you know, a big part of who you are. And he thinks that everybody needs to see that. Would you be cool with doing this hymn called Great Is Thy Faithfulness? And I was like, heck yeah, I'll do it. But I was like, I didn't even choose that for myself. Like Adam chose that song for me. And then later on when it came to Christmas, I remember I wanted to do O Holy Night, and another contestant was already doing it. So they gave me like, I'll Be Home for Christmas or something like that. And in that moment I said, well, I have another idea. Would it be possible to do, you know, a song like this? I don't know, with licensing and stuff like that. And I suggested Mary Did You Know? And in that moment, just like Adam had been like, I really think this is a big part of me, whatever. Adam was like, I never heard it, but if you say it, I trust you. Like he had never heard the song whenever I like went out and rehearsed it with him and sang it. And he was like, yeah, this is perfect. This sounds great. But it was just like, we were all sort of collaborating together to get to the end. And it was really cool because in my working relationship with him, he gave me the space to be an artist and didn't try to control it. He just sort of let things happen. And he like gave his opinion when he felt like I needed it. And he pushed me when I felt like I needed it, because like on Somebody to Love, for example, when he suggested that song, I was like, there's no way I can do that. I'm sorry. I was like, I'm not a performer. Like I can't do that. And he was like, I think you can, I think it's in you and you have to do it. And so, you know, we just sort of like push each other in that way. And there was a lot of trust there when we were working together on it.
You just celebrated a wedding anniversary this summer. I'd love to know how you met your wife.
I did. Okay. So it was in 2012 when we started dating. Our families are old friends. My dad went to school with Kristen's mom and like they've known each other forever. So they've always sort of like gone to church together at different times throughout their lives. So they always kind of knew each other. I always knew of Kristen. Here's a secret. She's older than me, like almost a decade older than me. So I was actually more friends with her younger sister than I was friends with her. We knew each other. We, like a bunch of churches in the area, all sort of went to the same summer camp. And so we would hang out there and, you know, see each other during the summers, and we were friends, but it was obviously not like, it never crossed my mind that it would be more than that ever, because she was like a full grown adult with like a job and a life. And I was like in high school. So my last year, I just turned 18. It's my last year at this camp before I'm like getting ready to head off to college. So we are at this camp. Okay. It's my last year. There's obviously hundreds of people there. And one night somebody goes, everybody keeps making the joke of like, you, if only you two were the same age, like you'd be perfect for each other and all this stuff. So one night somebody goes, you know what you should do? She was wearing like an antique ring of her grandmother's. They said, you should give him the ring and you two should go outside and do like a fake thing. And we should see if we can really make people think that you two just like got proposed, or like just got engaged. And I was like, okay. So literally all we have to do is, we have a few friends with us. There's a huge crowd of people outside. All we have to do is walk out there. And I literally, all I have to do is like bend down. And people are like, oh, they start cheering. I don't even say anything. I just like, whatever. Then she like goes, there's a picture like of us from the back that somebody was like, oh my gosh, a proposal, and snapped. And she's like, yes. And then we just hug. Like we don't kiss, we don't do anything. We just hug each other. And everybody like cheers and stuff. Well, then it's like, I get a call from my dad that's like, I saw an interesting something on Facebook. And people really genuinely thought that it happened. So for the rest of the week, I was like, hold the door open for her, and I'd be like, oh, here, let me get the door for you, babe. And, oh, can I get you something? And I'm so excited to be married, like all this stupid stuff. Just, you know, obviously it was a joke. And then by the end of the week, I was like, I actually kind of mean these things. Like, I actually can see this. So we went home, and the next week after that, we went out on our first date, and then we saw each other almost every single day until I left for college, like a few weeks later.
Did you go to dinner? Did you go to a movie? Did you go to the...
Oh my, you don't even want to... No, we went to the midnight premiere of The Dark Knight Rises, which is the one with Bane, and the audio in the theater was broken. Every time he would come on screen, he said... And she was like, what is he saying? And this big sweaty guy sat next to us, and he ate three bags of like teriyaki tropical beef jerky through the whole thing. And I was like, oh God, this is the worst thing ever. So we had a great time.
Let my worship be my weapon. You can have it all. Every hour, every second, let my spirit reach the heavens. You can have it all.
What is it about Jesus? What is it about him that makes you say, I want to sing about that guy? I want to write songs about that guy. What happened along the way that made you go, this is what I'm going to invest my life in?
Spiritually, that whole part of my life and my journey started out as, I guess, an obligation. Both of my parents were like very dedicated in church. You know, like I told you, they were doing the music. We were there every time the doors were open. As I got older, I started becoming more involved in the music at church, and to the point that it would be, you know, I would go to school till 3 o'clock. After school, I would stay there till 5 o'clock doing some sort of rehearsal for something. And then I would leave school and go straight to the church, and we would have music practice, or we would have prayer meeting, or we'd have something going on almost every night of the week. And it was just this thing I did. And I always joke and say, I don't ever remember actually getting saved. Like, I don't have a moment where I was like, this is when I came to know Jesus. I just always sort of was in it. And I prayed that prayer so many times as a kid that I just don't have that, you know what I'm saying, that moment where I was like, I knew. But it started out that way. And so for a very long time, I just knew I didn't have an option. I just knew that that's part of what we did. And that was like woven into the fabric of who I was, to serve and to be a part of the church. And it just wasn't an option. And then as I got older and I went away to college and I was sort of on my own, when I went to college, it was definitely not easy for me to be away, but it wasn't, there was a lot of stuff going on with my family at the time too. You know, my parents are incredible people, but they ended up getting a divorce right after I was on The Voice. So they were having trouble even when I left for school. And it was like, once I started growing up and realizing that they were having those issues, I started being the person that people were leaning on. And so I would, you know, get tearful calls from my mom, or we would talk on the phone for 2 hours. And I was in college, like during finals. And I began to realize, like, you know, this is not something I can do it myself. And so it went from not being an option to not being an option, if that makes sense. It became something that, like, I needed this. I needed him. I had to rely so heavily on him, like, just to breathe sometimes. And in that, I honestly just found total true freedom. I knew I was gifted for a long time, but I was so uncomfortable in it because, I mean, there were times that because my voice was different and because I sing like higher than some women and it's, you know, like I have this unique thing, I was made to feel like it was a distraction or it was weird or, you know, like, well, worship leaders, you know, like for Christian radio and for worship leaders, like people want to hear men sing like low and they want to hear, you know, a guy sing, and you have to be able to like sing for the guys in the congregation to sing, and we don't want you to be a distraction. And, you know, I dealt with so much stuff like that. And I guess for me in Christ, in my identity in Christ, is where I found true freedom and who I was. It's where I just, like, where I could go and be accepted. And I just want other people to experience that acceptance. You know what I'm saying? For me, it's like oxygen. Like, I literally wake up in the morning and I don't think, if I didn't have him to wake up to, if I wasn't able to go to him and lay down my cares, because I'm a generally happy guy, but I have anxiety just like everybody else. You know, I worry about things just like everybody else. I've gone through so much in the last 5 years since my career started. And, you know, I've had struggles just like everyone. And I think without him, I genuinely don't know how I would wake up and walk through the day and live and breathe without having someone to cast those cares on. So I feel a sense of purpose in that. I want to share that with people. I want other people to experience that sort of freedom and that sort of acceptance and relief that comes with knowing the Holy Spirit and being able to have that relationship. I actually carry way too much the weight of people's emotions. And when people are hurting and people are broken, I've just always carried this burden for people. And so, yeah, it just breaks my heart that there are people out there that don't know that kind of love and acceptance, that unconditional thing. And I want people to be able to experience that. I want people to know that there is somebody that loves them, that that love isn't dependent on what they do or who they are or the things that have happened in their past, but it's literally just true, unfiltered, unconditional love that they have access to. And I want to be able to share that. What a lovely question. Thank you for that.
What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network? Leave some feedback, write a review, hit the subscribe button so you never miss a new episode. What else with Corey Mann on the Studio DNA Podcast Network?